belong to the Pastor's Heart, and we're in the rush up to Christmas now, and this is our last live edition this year of the Pastor's Heart. Over the 3-week Christmas break, we're going to be playing out some of our most popular discussions from during 2018 that we hope might interest you freshly, or perhaps you missed them when we did them the first time around. Today, in our final edition, we're talking to Carl Mattei. Carl leads the ministry team at the University of New South Wales, campus Bible study in Uni Church. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's great to have you. I want to talk to you about training ministry trainees, and as a senior minister, taking on a ministry trainee in your church, or in your case as a campus. There's lots of people engaging with us today who are involved in campus ministry, but many, many more who are involved in local church ministry. But of course, there are in principle overlaps. Why a ministry trainee? Why have that as part of your DNA as a church ministry?
Yes, I think you want to have it so that you serve the nations with the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what we need, the world needs more Bible teachers.
Mm-hmm.
The world doesn't need more of most professions, but the world does need more, more Bible teachers.
More evangelists.
More evangelists, more Bible teachers, more missionaries. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope that every church in Sydney, having been blessed by God, because Christianity in Sydney, we've been amazingly blessed,
mm-hmm.
I would hope that we're actually thinking about how we might be serving the nations by sending some of our best to serve with the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Training them to handle the word of God, to proclaim it boldly, to pastor people well. That's the kind of thing that we want to be giving to the world.
Now, some people engaged in us in different leadership, whether they're in this city or in other cities, will already have ministry trainees on their team. And I want to talk about how we can sharpen the practice of training and raising them up. But also, some, the whole concept will be new and not part of the DNA of the church. How do you go about finding somebody to train? How do you go about envisioning that this is something we as a church ought to be doing?
Well, finding and envisaging is a little bit different. Let's deal with envisaging. Envisaging is the big picture kind of strategy of this is something that we as a church want to do. You can do that even when you have no one to train.
Mm-hmm.
Start praying that God will provide you with the kind of raw material, people that will come along and be ready to train. And so I would say to every senior minister out there, please, please start praying that you might become a training church. Even if there are no suitable people in the range that you think you want to get trainees from, start praying that God will bring them along.
Mm-hmm.
And start acting like a training church and preparing to be a training church, because we need you training people to serve the nations.
I remember years ago, Archie Poulos, there was a training seminar for ministers, and he asked me to do an elective. And he said, I want you to call the elective how to turn your church into a ministry training centre. And I'm not sure if the elective was of any use to anyone who came along to it, but it was extraordinarily helpful to me in making me write the elective.
Exactly.
And thinking about the topic. And his argument was, when he explained what he wanted me to say and then wheeled me out to say it, actually, we shouldn't think church first, we should think training first. I'd thought about that in terms of thinking, we're not thinking beach mission first, we're thinking training the team members of the beach mission first. Mm. But how does it change the way you go about your job, or the way I would go about my job, if I'm thinking training first rather than getting the job done?
Yep. So you've set that kind of vision for training. The next thing you're doing is you're looking at everyone that's involved with your ministry. And you're thinking, how am I training them? How am I training them? So training for full-time gospel ministry starts with training someone to open a Bible, training someone to read the Bible with someone else, training someone to speak the gospel to a friend who's not a Christian yet. So it starts very small training, and that training mentality starts there and grows to full-time training for gospel ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to look at every person that I'm in ministry with, that I'm serving with, every person who's coming along to the Bible talks, every person who's part of campus Bible study, and say, what is the next thing to train you in?
Mm-hmm.
And do you look like, as I watch you doing things, do you look like the kind of person that might be gifted to do this with all of your time? And so that I might start thinking about encouraging you to give up your degree, you know, finish your degree, but don't think you're going to work in it too long.
Mm-hmm.
give it up for the sake of serving the gospel full time? Are you the kind of person that has the kind of gifts that should do that because the world needs more Bible teachers?
Now, once you spot someone like that, what do you do?
Well, we want to develop them towards that full-time training. So we want to give them opportunities to do lots of ministry. We want them leading a Bible study group. Mm-hmm. We want them reading the Bible one-to-one with someone else. We want them evangelizing. We want them serving. If they're not serving when they're in lay ministry, the chances are of them suddenly serving in full-time ministry are pretty low, I would mm-hmm. think. I want to see them modeling right from when they're very early on with us, a servant-hearted mentality that says, I don't mind what the job is, I'm here to serve, let me at it.
Right. Now, once somebody says, okay, I'm willing, what kind of selection criteria do you go through? What do you look for in people you'll take as ministry trained? Should we take every live body?
No. In fact...
I mean, because some of us, over there at the University of New South Wales, you're dealing with a lot of cream of the crop. Do you know, we may not have quite the same pickings as you might have. Yeah.
It really is loving to people sometimes to say no.
And you've said no to some people?
We have. We do. Every year we do. Mm-hmm. We want what is best for the individual under God's hand. We don't want to force square pegs into round holes for that to be bad for the individual, for that to be bad for the people that perhaps have to put up with them. We really do care about people, and so sometimes we need to say no for the sake of the individual or for the sake of those they will minister to down the track. Mm-hmm. And that's loving. It would be unloving to let that go through to the keeper and not care about that.
Have you seen people that you've said no to for a traineeship then ignore you and go on to theological college and and then go pear-shaped?
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Right. Yeah. People, in a sense, make their own decisions. We'll advise them, but it's
a free will.
Free will.
Yeah. Now, okay, somebody starts with you. What's your goal in the time they're with you? What are you trying to achieve in the life of the individual ministry trainee?
Certainly. So the three C's are pretty well known. Firstly, conviction. That's your convictions about the gospel, about the Bible, about the world needing gospel ministers. Mm-hmm. Then there's character, that's definitely number two. Your character of godliness really, really matters. And then thirdly, it's competence.
Okay, so I've got three trainees.
Yep.
And actually four. I've got Thursday mornings, 2 hours that I spend with them. What should I be doing in my time with them as my weekly training time? Mm. Yeah. What are the inputs you want to do to see conviction, character and competence? And we're going to talk about what kind of competencies you're looking for. And,
certainly. Well, for a start, a lot of it's going to happen outside.
Because sometimes I feel like I lose focus. So I'm just kind of...
Yeah. A lot of it's going to happen outside of those 2 hours.
Yeah.
Before you even get into those 2 hours. When I see my trainees, what they're doing after church, mm-hmm. That tells me something about those three C's in their life. When I see the way they relate to their family... Mm-hmm. Or when I see the way they relate to their friends or to other students, I'm seeing the way that those three C's are coming out in their life. Mm-hmm. And so I want them to share my life so that we actually see each other in those kind of areas. Mm-hmm. And they can say, Carl, why did you do that? And I can say, why did you do that? We can actually keep each other accountable. So it's much more than those 2 hours. Those 2 hours are the intense kind of training time.
Yeah.
But so much training is about life, not just that mm-hmm. in the classroom.
How do you help them to see your life?
I do things with them, mm-hmm. And I invite them to do things with me. So when I was a trainee, I needed to go to a job interview at the end of being a trainee, and it meant driving 5 hours to the job interview and then staying overnight and then driving 5 hours home. So I said to one of the students who was possibly a future trainee, hey, want to come for a drive? Any time you can spend valuable time together, that's the kind of sharing your life thing. I'm going down to Melbourne to do some training down there in a month or two, and I thought to myself, I wonder if one of my trainees could fly down with me. I haven't yet pulled the trigger on that one. I don't mm-hmm. think it's going to be a little bit expensive, but I'm thinking, what can I do with them? Mm-hmm. How can they see what I do and... You know, critique what I do and mm-hmm. how can they come with me and go with me. Another moment was I did something at Moore College and it was about leadership, leading a team, and I said to my trainees, you guys are going to need to help me work out this. So mm-hmm. let's sit down with our 2 hours 1 week. Mm-hmm. We sit down and said, what do we want to present? How do we want to do this? And they did a better job than I would have done. It amazed me. It was great.
Mm-hmm. In the training time, you've given us one time when you got them to help you write a seminar.
Yeah, that's right.
But what else do you do?
Oh, they do all my work. We sometimes just go for a walk and talk. We sometimes...
30 of you. How many trainers have you got?
Sorry, I train individually 2 guys.
Right.
So all our long-term pastors train individually 2, 3, 4 trainees.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of real apprentice-trainee relationship, mm-hmm. that you have that individual personal relationship. We have about 20 trainees in the ministry, mm-hmm. but they are all allocated to their personal trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So I have 2 guys that I personally train, and they're the guys that I sat down with and helped me work out the Moore College talk. They're the guys that I'm thinking, can one of them fly to Melbourne with me, you know, mm-hmm. to be yep. involved in that I'm doing down there. It's those individual guys. And I'm hoping that our staff do that with
their
each
two.
Of theirs.
Yeah,
yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. Now, you had a question. I've forgotten it.
What do you do in the classroom time?
Yeah. So classroom, all 20 of them.
Yeah.
With our long-term staff, we do everything.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an issue that we're suddenly come up against at the university, there's a group who are teaching heresy. What are we going to do? How are we going to approach this? I've been asked to do a certain thing by a group. I might throw it to the whole team and say, should I do this? So mm-hmm. if there's a live current issue, we love throwing that to the team to mm-hmm. help them, because they're then seeing how we as the senior staff are making decisions. So mm-hmm. it's beautiful. We do Bible exegesis. We do theology. There'll be issues. We did baptism a few weeks ago. Joshua Ng did a great job taking us through views of baptism and working out where we all stood. Things like that, really helpful. We do a little bit of admin and planning. We do making the most of things like our conferences. In the lead up to that, we're going to do theology of mid-year conference. We're going to do how do you do the people work at conference. So it's really taking trainees through the whole ministry year, and anything you're doing is going to be useful for them learning from.
Mm.
So the sky's the limit. And in fact, the more real it is, the more that it's lived out, actually decisions that you need to make in the ministry at the moment, I think the better it gets.
Because everyone's concentrating on
it. Yeah, we need this.
This matters. We've got to get a result.
That's right.
We've got to work it out. Yeah.
Live bullets.
Mm. Where do you see ministers making mistakes in the whole area of ministry trainees?
Yeah. I worry that we devalue trainees when we try to turn them into a bargain. And so one of the best things that we ever did, one of the hardest things as well, was to move our trainees to paying minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant we had to find an extra $20,000 for each trainee.
Yep.
And when you've got 20 of them, it kind of adds up.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
That was really challenging for us. It meant...
And so people watching in other countries or listening in other countries won't be aware of this debate in Australia. But in the Christian ministry circles in Australia, there really are 2 ways of approaching this. One is to have a minimum wage ministry trainee, and the other is to have a scholarship kind of trainee, at a significantly lower rate, but with a whole lot of kind of government conditions on. Mm. Do you want to just tell us how you weighed those issues up?
Yeah, for us, we didn't want the government to tell us how to train our trainees, and so the only way really to do that is to actually pay minimum wage, and then our trainees are actually considered to be workers.
Mm-hmm.
The Australian government sets a minimum wage that any worker in the country needs to be paid. We figure that's probably what they need to live on. So we actually went to paying that minimum wage. And it means that we can then train our trainees however we want, because they're technically classed by the government not as trainees but as workers. And so we could work them for 40 hours and give them no training and we wouldn't be breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
We love training, so we actually want to train them. And we, in paying the minimum wage, it also made us see how much value they are to us. And we, it's a lot of money. It costs us, I think, in the, it's about 40, the package would be about $45,000. Sorry, don't quote me on that, but it's somewhere around there for each trainee. That's a significant amount of money. So every trainee is an investment. But rather than seeing every trainee as a discount or a bargain or a cheap labour, we see every trainee as a really big investment. We're investing so that the world might benefit from these people in the future.
Mm, the world might benefit. What do you mean there?
We are praying that our trainees might actually take the gospel overseas. And we'll encourage our trainees, if they can, to go outside of Australia. If they can't go outside of Australia, we will encourage them to go outside of Sydney. And if they can't go outside of Sydney, we'll say, that's great, there's plenty of ministry in Sydney to be done. But that's the order that we'll encourage our trainees. Because when it comes down to it, Sydney has been blessed amazingly with so many gospel ministries. We want to see that blessing flow over to the nations.
How are you going at that?
Well, it's hard work. In God's kindness, we're starting to see trainees getting selected with CMS. And so two of our trainees from 5-6 years ago will be going out with CMS next year. And that's exciting. They've been accepted. Both to Asian countries, which is really exciting. We've got quite a connection with Asia, with students coming down from Asia to study with us at UNSW. And so it's really exciting to be kind of sending workers back to Asia to serve them.
What mistakes have you made?
Yes, many. Off the top of my head, which ones am I happy to talk about?
It's just us, Carl.
Yeah, that's right. Mistakes. Mistakes in training. I think we're getting better at working out how to train trainees well. I think we're doing a better job, and it's not me. I think my team is doing a better job of training trainees well. We've now got two of our senior staff are focused on training. And so it's not their full-time job. It's a half-time job for each of them. But they are thinking training curriculum. They're thinking training recruitment. They're thinking training selection. They do the whole interview process. So they are, that's Charles and Tracy, do so much to see the training program running really well. I think before we had them in place, trainees more learned from just hanging on and sort of seeing everything but not really having a tailored program. I think we're doing a much better job now of thinking from really starting to think about trainees in year one of university. You've just arrived. Who are the first years who we want to keep an eye on for these possible traineeships down the track? All the way through to the interviews and the recruiting. I think we're doing a better job now because we've dedicated staff to just thinking about that.
Where have you worked people too hard and where have you not worked people hard enough?
Yeah, interesting. Generally on our team, we have the kind of people that work too hard. And so that our danger, we're not 50-50. Our danger, probably 95% of our people, the danger is they're going to work too hard. So I encourage people to take breaks, take holidays. I feel like it's my job as the leader of the team to help people be responsible and godly. Now, in doing that, I noticed a couple of years ago that I might have pushed too hard back the other way. And so then I thought, oh, okay, I need to just back off a little bit because maybe, you know, we've got a bit of a culture of making sure you get enough holidays and stuff. So there is a middle ground that I'm looking for, but generally at Campus Bible Study, 95% of our people are more likely to be workaholics than lazy. So I've got to slow them down. I've got to send them away on holidays. We're pretty generous with holidays. We're a pretty fast-paced ministry, so I encourage our people to take 5 weeks of holidays, and I also encourage them to take a two-day weekend once a quarter because we work 6 days a week. I encourage people, if they can, get 2 days in a row, probably not Sunday because Sunday is just a little bit important.
It's game day for you.
It's game day. Take 2 days in a row, once a quarter, and just remember what a weekend feels like. So I'm trying to help people be wise and balanced.
Mm. What's the challenges for university ministry coming up?
The challenges for university ministry? Well, universities have changed and are changing. So universities are businesses that sell degrees. And that means that the way that the student experience is very different to, say, when you or I were at university. It means that students, if they're not careful, can just be at university to get a degree, and they can stack their timetable so that they are only in 2 days a week and they've got no gaps and can really
work the other 2 days,
that's
three
right.
days. Yeah.
And you can really miss out on the best thing about university, and that is growing as a Christian. And so the big threat is that universities aren't thinking about how we might best grow Christians to maturity. We've got to keep thinking, we've got to keep encouraging students to use their time wisely, to not block up their whole time at uni so they can't learn from the Bible, can't serve others. I think that's one of the big threats. The other big threat, well, I want to call it an opportunity. Our big opportunity at the moment is we're training. We had about 10 trainees a year. So we have, it's a 2-year program. There's 20 trainees roughly on at any one time. The time is short and the nations need more gospel workers. So I'm trying to work out how we can train 30, 40. And one of our problems is we have principles that we don't want to break. So we don't want to change the way we train people away from.
So what are those principles you don't want to break? Tell us those. Help us see that tension.
Well, we love the apprentice model. We actually want to give our trainees live bullets, real people that they pastor. So we don't want to just sit them in a classroom and tell them, train them. And we actually want them pastoring a group of people where they can fail, where they can have joy, where they can see the pain of things that don't work so well. And in a sense, that our challenge then,
which is the whole thing of not using them, but training them.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But the challenge is that it's much easier if you could corral them all into a room and just download at them. In terms of training trainees, you could fit how many in a room? You could
100, 200,
yeah, 300. That's right. So we actually want the training experience to be a Bible teaching experience, to be a pastoring experience, real life pastoring, taking responsibility for a group of people and actually caring for them for 2 years, ministering to them, teaching them, growing them. And so the challenge to do that is trainers who can walk beside them in that role. We will grow, and we under God's hand, we want to grow, but there are challenges when you are principled.
I'm seeing a tension around the place in both in churches where there aren't ministry trainees and in churches where there are, between the issue of kind of almost, and I'm not sure if people in other cities would be feeling this same tension, but in this city I'm feeling the tension between taking for granted theology and just upskilling people in skills and leadership skills and that kind of thing. Do you feel that tension, and how do you deal with that? Or do you see that tension? Yeah.
I do see the tension, and it worries me. You could. It's not just a theological understanding. It's actually a philosophical view of how ministry is done. It's whether theology shapes ministry or whether pragmatics can shape ministry. And in a sense, there's always going to be pragmatics, but it's whether you let theology win and whether you let theology shape that the way that you train people. So our principle on wanting to do an apprentice-style training rather than a classroom-style training is actually shaped by our theology. And so theology shapes the way you do everything. So I think the danger with pragmatics, and we all know this in a sense, is that it subtly undercuts your theological positions that you hold. And so there's always that battle between pragmatics and theology, and I want theology to win. And sometimes that means that we are not going to do things as efficiently or as effectively as we could, and I'm willing to wear that for the sake of our theological convictions.
Give me an example of that. Yeah.
Okay, so one of our new young staff, he's great, he's doing a great job, but he loves... He's
exposed on the pastor's
heart. Yeah, that's
heart.
Right. He's an engineer, and he's great. He's a really good pastor, and he's done a great job. But he'll regularly come to me and say, Carl, we could do this a bit more efficiently or effectively. You know, he's a great engineer, and he'll tell me how we could. And I say, we're not on about doing things a bit more efficiently or effectively. We're on about people.
Give me an example. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say yes in principle, but yeah. I just want to Can feel the tension,
the, top
that,
of my head?
The tension that if somebody came to me and said that, put that question to me.
Yeah. What's the example? I'm not going to be able to think of it off the top of my head. Keep going. Okay. I'll try.
Okay. We asked the question on the pastor's heart. What's God? Where's an area where God has worked in your heart to change you and shape you? Tell us about that.
Yeah. God has broken me in a sense, and if God hasn't broken you, I'm not sure that you're ready to serve. There's a story about one of the great English preachers. I can't remember whether, I don't think it was Spurgeon. It might have been Lloyd Jones. He was back at a gathering of clergy in Scotland or Wales or somewhere, and they were all choosing someone for a particular role. And they chose a young up-and-coming guy, and all the guys said, he's the one who should do this role. And I think it was Lloyd Jones who said, no, not him, he hasn't been broken yet. I think God has broken me over the years of being a husband and a father, some health issues in my family where I just had to trust God. And it was really good for me to sort of sit there and think, well, there is nothing more I can do. This is in God's hands and I trust God.
Mm.
And for me, that was a very significant time. Being someone who naturally likes to take care of myself, it was, and my family, it was really nice to have it taken out of my hands and for it to be in God's hands and for me to have to just deal with that. And very hard times.
Really nice? Or
well, it was terrible, really hard time. Family health was, you know, really touch and go. But for me to not be able to solve the problem, as someone who likes solving problems, that was really good for me.
Mm.
So God, in a sense, broke me to take away a bit of pride from my heart and to remind me that I depend upon Him for everything.
Mm.
I think that was a good lesson. And I'm... It was terrible, it was hard, but I'm really glad God has put me through that.
Mm. Carl Maddie, thanks for coming to talk to us.
Thanks, Dominic.
My guest on The Pastor's Heart has been Carl Maddie, and of course Carl leads the Christian ministry team at the University of New South Wales for Campus Bible Study and Uni Church. You've been watching The Pastor's Heart, and what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks, over the Australian summer, is we're going to be bringing you three of our highlight interviews from during the year, interviews that have created some of the most discussion online. Perhaps you missed them when we did them. Next week, we're going to feature an interview with Evan McFarlane. He was on the ministry team at St. Paul's Carlingford. Now he's serving as the senior minister of St. Matthew's Shenton Park. And he got people talking a lot earlier in the year when we were talking to him about the whole culture of one-to-one ministry within his church and the extraordinary percentage of people who are involved in personal discipleship. And I think all of us, as we sat around here and listened to Evan, we thought, oh, I just wish that we could see our church become like that. And so I hope you'll enjoy that interview when we feature that with Evan next week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.